Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Welcome to episode 26 of Dudes on Hockey. You know who's number 26, dude?
Who is it, dude?
Steve Bernier.
Which team is that?
Robin Bawa.
Wow.
You like that?
I do like that.
How about Lynn Loines?
Whoa.
I think this might be a new feature I'm going to institute a Dudes on Hockey. Every week, I'm going to name the number. And this week, Steve Bernier.
Nice. You very like that? Nice. That's nice. Is he still wearing 26 and on his third NHL team in a year?
I would have to check on that. I don't know the answer to that.
Quality player, Steve Bernier.
Absolutely not. Okay, so... thanks for listening. I'm Mike, and that's Doug.
What's up, dude?
We're here to talk about the Sharks, as always, but we have to open with the poll question because it was a hotly contested poll.
That's right. Let's remind the listeners what the poll question was, Mike.
Absolutely. Okay, so the poll question was, which is worse? A, the guy beside you who never stops talking about non-hockey crap, or B, the guy behind you who says consistently idiotic things about the game in progress?
Ooh.
So... it was 13-12.
Wow.
It is close.
Who's the winner, Mike?
The winner, according to our listeners, is the guy besides you who never stops talking about non-hockey crap.
It's pretty annoying.
It's very annoying. But you know what? I'm going to have to go with the guy behind us.
Yeah.
Because that dude is wicked annoying. And it's really hard to express to the listeners... what makes this jackass so annoying? And at least for me, I finally figured out what it is. It's his tone of voice. He is acting like he is a professor of hockey. And it's so funny. I mean, the guy, he misreads plays. He says the wrong things. You know, he claims certain things about the game, which just frankly aren't true. It just really gets on my nerves. It really does.
I think when we started the season, we found it maybe cute. Like a three-legged puppy.
Right.
But it's not cute anymore.
No.
It's time to put him to sleep.
Yeah. It's really... And the other thing is that he's there pretty much every game.
Absolutely.
And the annoying guy beside us isn't there every game. So it definitely sort of multiplies over time.
This is true.
Yeah. So I thank you for your input, Dudes on Hockey listeners, because it was a close call for us as well. But I think we're both going to have to go with the jackass behind us.
Mm-hmm. You guys got it right.
That's right. So I'll have to think of a new poll question because this is very illuminating so far. Anyway, let's get to the games because there were three games this week, Ducks, Blues, and Kings. Lots of interesting things to talk about in all of those games.
Dude, do you know what was in common from all three of these games?
We won.
Yes.
Gotta love it, man. Gotta love it. I mean, Ducks was definitely, at least for me, the most anticipated of the three because, you know, division rival, they're third in the West, won the Cup 2 years ago. There's definitely a lot of, and plus, they, you know, the teams hate each other. There's a lot of rough stuff going on.
Absolutely.
It was
great
a mean,
fight.
Mean and nasty game. It really was.
Great fight.
And it was a good fight. Parros and Shelley, I didn't look on hockeyfights.com. Maybe that's worth checking out, but if I had to score it, I probably would have scored it a draw. It was a pretty good bout. I thought Shelley landed... a really good right, and actually landed a really good right on Evenans, which I think is how you pronounce his name, against the Kings last night. So Shelley is, he's in fine form as a pugilist, I would say.
Mm-hmm. It was voted a draw.
Okay.
Between the two, 53% voted a draw.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I would have called it, too. One interesting stat that I took away from the game is that the Ducks were pretty bad on the faceoff dot. Joe Thornton was 11-2 in the dot, which is, I mean, that's beyond domination. That is just unreal. And usually his nemesis, Sammy Paulson, was 4-9 in the dot. So JT owned him. Big Joe owned the dot that night. Gotch was 7-5. Pavs was 10-6. I think that could have been a key to the Sharks winning.
It's been a key all year for them winning.
I think they're third in the league, third or second in the league in faceoff percentage. So that is, I wonder if that's something that McClellan has stressed because you don't really hear too much about that in the press at all. But I wonder if that's something that was really looked at by the coaching staff.
It's all about possession for him, keeping possession, you know, defensemen maintaining possession instead of panicking and dumping it out and gaining possession off the faceoff. And I think all of those things have added to our record-setting success, Mike.
I would say so. And the Blues game was entirely different. The Blues came out to a early lead. They were up 3-1, and I got a little nervous. I thought this could be it. This could be the first regulation loss at the Tank.
No way. This was my favorite game of the week, Mike.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You know why?
Because we won?
No. Because this guy sat in the penalty box before the game.
That's right. That's cool. Right.
All thanks to my wife, who sang the national anthem before the game on Saturday.
Yeah, that's cool.
Knocked it out of the park, if I may say so myself.
She did quite well.
She did awesome. But the Sharks were totally gracious and offered to let us sit in the penalty box before the game during warm-ups. And so, of course, I took them up on that and sat down there. And Mike, one Shark make eye contact with me, gave me a little nod like a what's up.
Mm-hmm.
You know who it is?
Jody Shelley.
That's right, baby.
It's always got to be right. Jody Shelley.
You know what I mouthed back to him? I'm going to fight you.
I'm coming after you. You and me meet.
It was really cool and interesting to see how many NHL officials that they crammed down there into that area. Inside the Sharks penalty box, there is the timekeeper, the guy who's doing the score, the guy who's running all of the hockey related video operations of the evenings down there. Mm-hmm. So at least four or five guys and the Sharks penalty box. So they're all in the Sharks penalty box. There's no divider between them.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And so, when Jody Shelley gets set to the sin bin, he's sitting in there with these five other guys.
Right.
And, there is a divider between the Sharks penalty box and of course the visiting penalty box. And there's nobody in there except for the guy who opens the gate. But the guy in there was awesome. He had some great stories about the penalty box, which I will not share. But
not for family.
No, but it was a really cool experience in addition to a great comeback.
That's right. I mean, and definitely, I think sort of a subplot of both the Blues and the Kings games was special teams. The Sharks killed a 2-minute 5-on-3 in the Blues game. They killed a 4-minute, a double minor in the Blues game. And they were 1-for-5 on the power play. So, 20% is usually pretty good. And they were 5-for-6 on the penalty kill against the Blues. And the Kings, they scored on their only power play. And they had a shorthanded goal and didn't give up a power play goal. And I think that was probably the difference in the Kings game. Because the Kings game was close.
Yeah.
And you called it. You called it. It was going to be close. And it was. Especially since...
I called the exact score, Mike. I just want to throw that out there.
You did. You did. We definitely should mention that your predictions are really coming true here.
I wish I lived in Vegas. It's interesting that, you've got two teams like Columbus and St. Louis that are only 2 points apart in the standings. Columbus is a threatening 29 points and St. Louis is a whopping 27.
Uh-huh.
But they throw out what probably could be their best effort. Like St. Louis, they played hard. They took it to the Sharks. And they still choked and lost. And they've got to wonder, what the hell do you have to do to beat the Sharks?
Right. And at least with the Kings, certainly a storyline for that game is that the Sharks had some players out with injuries. So we should talk about that.
Absolutely.
Pavelski was out with an injury that we don't know what it is, but it doesn't appear to be serious. Chichu is out.
JR.
And then JR.
And it looks like JR's, they're saying 3 weeks. I'm not buying that message, Mike, are you? Yeah,
I think it's going to be longer than that. If you're going to have surgery on your shoulder, man, that's not something that you're just going to bounce back from really, really quickly. And plus,
especially the way he plays.
And he's no spring chicken either. I think, the older you get, the longer it takes to recover from those kinds of injuries. Sharks are definitely going to miss him in the lineup. But so now we're playing McGinn, we're playing Tom Cavanaugh, and we're playing Lukasz Kaspar. So we have three rookies in the lineup as of now. Three offensive players.
Right. No, we can't forget about Torrey Mitchell, who could be the key to this injury problem. They've been real hush-hush as far as when he's coming back. I had said on the blog that I thought Mitchell wouldn't be back until after Christmas. They seem to sort of be tagging Christmas as a time for him to come back. But now, maybe if he's getting close, do you think it's possible that they could throw him in there maybe a little bit sooner than originally planned?
I think it's possible, but only if the Sharks start losing. I mean, because if the Sharks are sort of cruising along, you know, this week is going to be tough. You know, got back-to-back away games. You know, if they lose to Detroit on Thursday, but, you know, they play well against Columbus, maybe win that game, and then, you know, give the Rangers a good game over the weekend. You know, you wouldn't really want to rush somebody back. I mean, if the whole ship it just starts sinking a little bit, then I could see them trying to rush people back into the lineup. But
I mean,
they have a healthy lead in the division, so there's no reason to try and bring people back. But I do wonder about Kaspar. He got a lot of minutes, and I thought he made some sort of really bad mental errors.
He had a terrible pass in his own end, right in front of the goal. It was like shades of Christian Ehrhoff bad.
Yeah.
From last year. I mean, Ehrhoff this year has been just a completely different player, but Kaspar last night, he got 16 minutes of ice time.
And McGinn and Kavanaugh got less than five.
McGinn got less than five. Yeah. I don't totally understand it. And I sort of feel like it's Kaspar's last stand here. This is it. Mm-hmm. They're giving him the opportunity here to show he's worthy of a spot. It's not like he's tearing it up in the AHL.
No,
right?
Certainly
not. I mean,
not.
I'm looking here. I don't even see his stats. They must have pulled them off the site. No, here it is. He had 13 points in 21 games.
Okay.
So I mean, that's
it's not awesome.
No,
it's not.
It's not. He's not even in the top. He's the eighth on the team in scoring.
Yeah.
So, and now he's playing on the second line. On the best team in the NHL.
Right, right. So, yeah, or you think they could be dangling Kaspar, you know, for trade or something?
It's possible. It's possible. You know, there's still that...
He's cheap.
Absolutely. And if they decide to send him down again, he's going to have to go through waivers, and maybe Doug Wilson is hoping someone's going to take him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's possible.
That's true.
So I'm still not a big fan, although he looked okay against St. Louis in stretches. I liked what McClellan did last night. He ended up splitting up Joe and Marleau for probably the last period. I noticed that Marleau was centering that second line, and you know, then we came back and won. So although we were already ahead at that point, actually. No, sorry. It was tied. So I don't know what I'm talking about.
So, okay, I'll put you on the spot then, since you're the prediction master. What do you see in that crystal ball of yours for this week?
Well, I don't really have a great feeling, actually, about these back-to-back games coming up. I think a lot of it has to do with Pavelski. If Pavelski's out tomorrow, I think we're going to lose to Columbus. Mm-hmm. I think Columbus, that was a really tough game the last time we played them. They play us hard. They seem to kind of get the low cycle against us. They're physical. And they play hard for Ken Hitchcock, and they've got a hot goaltender. I could see the Sharks dropping that game tomorrow if they don't have Pavelski. If they have Pavelski, I think we'll gut out a win. But I think we're going down on Thursday in Detroit, Mike.
You think the Joe, Sharks have never been good at the Joe.
Yeah, I think that is going to be for sure the one loss of the week. And I hate to say that, but I think Detroit has been waiting to see us again.
I unfortunately think you're probably right. I think Detroit is going to be... That'll be an amazing win if they manage to win, especially with Pavelski out, you know, especially with JR out and Chichu out and all these guys out. Because I don't think... I think Chelios is back in the lineup. I don't think they have anybody out in Detroit right now. So they got the whole team running. You know, Hossa and Datsyuk and Zetterberg and Franzen and Holmstrom. I mean, the list just goes on and on with those guys. I can't imagine them dropping a game at home to us, to anybody, really.
Well, they lost last night to Colorado. You have to wonder that maybe they were looking ahead a game.
Could be.
Because the next game they have is San Jose. So that's going to be another motivating factor for the Red Wings. Babcock, the game's on Versus, and he basically said, "We suck," you know, during the game, during the telecast. We're not playing good. So there's no way they're going to be really happy. They're going to take it to us. But nothing would surprise me. The Sharks have been beyond expectations all year. They've always stepped up to the challenge, and they've been surprising us, even the two of the most diehard fans you're going to find every game. So would not be a shocker if they stepped up and won.
Yeah, time and again, I think they're not going to come back, and they do. So I've been wrong so many times about that, I can't even count. But okay, so let's try the next thing, which is something you proposed. Are You Glad We Traded Somebody? And this week's edition of Are You Glad We Traded is Are You Glad We Traded Craig Reeve?
That's right.
Who is the captain for the Buffalo Sabres, but out again, hurt again.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sharks got two second-round picks for Craig Reeve?
Two second-round picks. So are you glad we traded? Maybe we should make this the poll question.
Maybe.
Are you glad we traded Craig Reeve? He's missed 9 games this year with injury. He has 1 point since November 8th. And can you imagine Craig Reeve playing well in this system?
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Right.
So again, has Doug Wilson been a super genius? Great guy. Great player.
Absolutely.
Not great. Good player. Good team guy. Poor fit for the Sharks system. But what do you guys think? Are you glad we traded Craig Reeve?
Okay, it'll be up on dudesonhockey.com, so you can check that out. Or if you have a very, if you disagree with us vehemently, you can email us at questions@dudesonhockey.com. So one thing I do want to mention, Sharks fans, is we were supposed to have a guest, John Swenson from Sharks Page, on the show this week. But unfortunately, we had technical difficulties. We're going to try to get him on the show next week because he runs a good site, and I'm sure he's going to have a lot of insight as to what is going on with this team, especially in regards to prospects in the minor league system. So definitely check us out again next week for episode 27. But right now, we have to do the latest episode of Everybody Loves Avery. Now, Sean, you've done great in your therapy sessions, and I think you're ready to rejoin the world and maybe even play hockey again. But we do need to have a last test, and that's to sing the song that we've been singing. You ready? I'm a little teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle, and here is my...
I think you're going to need another couple of weeks. That was the latest episode of Everybody Loves Avery. It just gets better and better every week. I think we need that. Anyway, so...
Sean Avery is like endless material.
It is. I mean, we could do Sean Avery at the halfway house.
Don't give away our future episodes.
Yeah, there's so many good ones coming.
If you have a plot idea for Everybody Loves Sean Avery, give us an email at questions@dudesonhockey.com.
That's right. That's right. But, actually, we have to go right into another segment and check this out. You ready for this?
You know what time it is. It's Lemieux Watch 2008.
Dude,
you know this is my favorite segment, and this is starting to get a little bit of publicity. I saw an article about Claude Lemieux. Lemieux starts The Long Road Back here by Dan Hickling. Special to Yahoo Sports is on Yahoo Sports today. Lemieux, this week, not a great week stats-wise. No goals, 1 assist, minus 1, 11 shots.
Okay.
8 penalty minutes. Now we're talking.
Okay.
That's the Claude Lemieux we love. Overall, 5 points plus 2, 10 PIMs. He's coming, Mike.
He's coming.
Can you feel it?
I think the Lemieux watch is gaining momentum.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that article on Yahoo was because of Lemieux watch 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just kidding.
This is it's interesting. I just found this article. I'm just kind of scanning it here while we're recording, and you know let me ask you this, and I already know the answer, Mike, but can you explain to the listeners why didn't Claude Lemieux get the call when JR went down? What's the contract situation with that?
Well, the contract situation with Lemieux is I believe he's still even on a tryout contract.
Mm-hmm.
And if we sign him to a deal, at least a NHL deal, then since he is old, and by old, I mean old.
43.
He's 43. And problems with Matthew Schneider and JR, his deal will always be on the books in terms of the salary cap. So if this is something that the Sharks want to take a flyer on and see, well, he's not the right player to do that with. You want to do that with a guy that you can waive, send down to the minors, and then release the cap money back in. So they can't do that with Lemieux. So if they're going to sign Lemieux, they're going to say he is definitely on the club. They can't bring him up and try him out and see how he does. They're going to have to know. So there's still the distinct possibility that he could get signed by another National Hockey League team, not the Sharks. But I think we might both be hoping that, you know, trade deadline time, playoff push time, even in the playoffs, we might see Claude Lemieux and Teal.
Roenick, Lemieux, Jody Shelley.
It could be really sweet.
The Red Wings, that would have their full attention.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I look at Lemieux more and more like Doug Wilson's not going to make a trade at the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to sign Claude Lemieux. Bring him up. It's like bringing in a player for trade. Lemieux on the team in February. Bring it.
All right. We got to go to the emails
because
we do have emails this week. So here, I think we got two emails this week.
Excellent.
All right. So the first one is from Steve. And Steve says, I get that you guys haven't exactly been the biggest fans of Semenov, and I couldn't agree more. And he says, watching Sharks Ducks, I can't help but think how much better off we'd be if we got Brett Hedekin on the cheap over the summer had we not signed Frankenstein. He would have fit under the cap after the McLaren move, and I wonder if we could have gotten him for less than Anaheim. The obvious question is whether he would have accepted the role as a 7th D-man or we would have had to do something else. Nevertheless, is Brett Hedekin somebody that we might sign in years to come? And do you think that the Sharks might do that next summer?
That's a really great question. I think that we've already seen the statistics that I threw out there that others have noticed as well. But we're going to leave it right there.
We'll leave it there.
The Sharks' record with Semenov in the lineup is now 6-2-2. Two overtime losses, two regulation losses. And the Sharks, without Frankenstein, well, as I put it, Frankenstein back in the laboratory, are 18-1. So when you have a player on the ice for four of your five losses, that's a telling stat. Don't you think, Mike?
I think so. I mean, it's too small to be really significant and to say Semenov is the cause of the losses or anything like that. But you have to sort of think about that and say, you know, that's weird. I mean, the guy, he's only played 10 games or something like that. And half of them are losses, or almost half?
Yeah. It's not necessarily that you look at his stats, they're not bad. But when you look at what the other players have to do to compensate for his futility, I think it takes guys like a Dan Boyle or a Blake or someone who's paired with him. I almost look at having him out there, you have to babysit him.
Yeah.
He can't be trusted. You can go around him. It's not the same as playing with Lukic, who is, you know, a proven winner twice over.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't have to worry about your partner. When you have a liability next to you, it might take some of the other players out of their game. And I don't think it's a coincidence. And if someone goes down and Frankenstein has to play,
yeah,
I think we've got a big problem. And Hedekin would have been a much better choice.
The thing about Hedekin, Steven, is that I think he wants minutes. And I sort of your comment about whether he would have accepted a 7th man role, I think the answer to that would be no. I think he wanted to contribute. And looking at his stats with the Ducks, he's playing a lot of minutes. He's playing 16, 17, 18 minutes a night. And that's even less than he's normally used to. Right. And so if you put him out there and say, hey, you know, you're going to be scratched some of the time, I don't think Hedekin would be down with that. Even though he's from this area, I think that he maybe, just pure conjecture on my part, the Sharks might have said, hey man, you know, what do you think? And he said, you know, what's the deal? And they say, well, we got our top six, but you know, we're going to need you for depth. And he said, maybe he said, I'm holding out. And the Ducks in all of their crap with Ken Klee and everybody else, they could give him a full spot in the lineup. So
it's certainly not like he took the money. He's making just under 900,000.
That's right.
So the money, I don't know, probably wasn't the issue. I bet you're right, Mike. I bet it was the playing time. We heard rumors that Hedekin was going to be coming to the Sharks. It was probably discussed. And, instead of willing to take that role, you know, he wanted to play. And I can't say I blame him. I guess he doesn't want to win another cup.
Well, in terms of next summer, I would say if we don't get Blake back, if Blake doesn't resign, then I think the Hedekin thing becomes much more likely. But if we keep our same top six next year and we re-sign Blake and the other five guys are, I think, all under contract.
They are.
So that means it would have to be a seventh D-man slot. I think Hedekin wouldn't come. But I think the only way we could see him on the Sharks is if we do have an open slot on the blue line for him. So I guess that's really contingent on what happens with Rob Blake. So good question. Ivan Makarov did email us about Claude Lemieux. So we talked about Claude Lemieux a little bit. And he said, would you rather have Gotch skating out there or Lemieux?
In a playoff series?
Yeah.
That's a no-brainer.
Yeah,
baby.
That's a no-brainer.
I'd rather have Mario Lemieux.
And I think Mr. Makarov said what we said a couple weeks ago. In a Detroit series, you want Claude.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He can take that series to a whole different level.
I slipped in Mario Lemieux there, Mike. You didn't even blink.
Mario Lemieux? Yeah, see, I'm reading and thinking. And, oh. Yeah. We could get Mario Lemieux, too.
Oh, the cleverness of me.
But anyway, Claude Lemieux watch. It's going to continue until something happens. And it may continue right up until the playoffs where we see him right in the lineup wearing an FU on the back of his jersey instead of numbers.
Do you think he'll send Draper a card?
Yeah, I think.
See in the finals.
I'm sure he got a Christmas card from Claude Lemieux this year. It's just a big middle finger. But anyway, let's go to the shootout because we do have some interesting stories to talk about this week. So we've talked about too many weeks, but it's finally about to come to an end. Matt Sundin, at least I hope it's coming to an end. So I was wrong. He's down to two teams, the Canucks and the Rangers. So the call, what's the call? Where's he going?
Atlanta.
Exactly. No, I'm still going to say Rangers. I'm going to say Rangers.
God, I got to think you're right at this point because if people talk about the travel, I mean, that mm-hmm. could be a factor. The money, I mean, is there in Vancouver and the Rangers aren't going to be able to give him the 10 mil. The Rangers are going to have to make a trade. So are they really going to trade Scott Gomez to free up
I heard money? A bunch of sort of conspiracy theories about maybe trying to dump Roosevelt or demoting Peter Pruka or demoting this guy or that guy and then getting $2 or $3 million and you know, it was kind
how
of
much
crazy...
money do you think he's going to get is the key question here.
That is a big question. And
we know what it is for Vancouver. It's 10 mil. And so is he going to take a $5 million pay cut to play in New York?
I think so. Because if he wanted the money, he would have already signed. That's my feeling. He knows that the money's on the table with Vancouver. It's been on the table the entire time. And they're still in the hunt. I think he's just dragging them along because just in case the Rangers can't get something together. That's just my feeling. So I'd say, you know, at least 3-1 Rangers would be my guess here.
Roosevelt's making 5 mil, so if they can dump Roosevelt, they'd have to take back someone else's problem in return.
Right.
Because Roosevelt is playing mediocre hockey at best with 4 more years on his deal.
Yeah. Well, I heard Kalinin and Pruka might be guys that they could demote and send down. I don't know. It seems like they're really going to have to twist themselves into a big knot in order to free up any kind of salary.
So. Well, supposedly we're having an answer tomorrow, so we'll see what happens.
I hope so, because then we don't have to talk about this anymore. So the second thing is we have the return of Solani. Peter Forsberg says he might want to come back, do the Solani thing, come back for the playoffs. But he only wants to play for the Avalanche. So what's your reaction to that?
I hate this guy.
And the thing is, the Avalanche aren't going to the playoffs anyway, so what's he coming back for?
Yeah, so I guess you're not... Stay in Sweden.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great player. It's just, you know, I just don't think he's physically fit to play. I think even if he does come back... And I mean, there was talk about him having some sort of electric shock thing in his boot for his foot, and he had, like, batteries in his pants. And that was the quote, batteries in my pants, which is an awesome quote. I mean, all of this stuff. I mean, he's not coming back, right?
God, he turns up time after time like a bad rash, Mike.
That's right.
You know he'll be on whoever we play in the first round.
Yeah.
He'll be there.
I think he's just going to do the Avalanche thing. I honestly do.
Think so.
Or nothing. But there's more Avalanche news, and that's Joe Sakic's out even more time because he got his hand in a snowblower, and he tore some tendons and messed up his fingers and stuff. I mean,
what are you doing using a snowblower yourself? I guess Scott Hannon was too busy being a -4 to help you out.
I mean, the guy's making $8 million a year. What are you doing with a snowblower? You can hire like 8 guys to run a snowblower.
He's a man of the people, Mike.
I guess.
Use your own snowblower.
I suppose.
You use your own snowblower.
I certainly
And you've
do.
Got a very successful podcast.
Several times a day.
Oh my.
Actually, wait, we should use this one.
Thank you.
Is that better?
Good podcast, Mike.
Thanks, dude. Okay, that does it for this week of Dudes on Hockey. You can read us on the web at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com, and we'll be back again next week, same time, same place.
Dude, who's the cuter redhead, Mike Commodore or Brian Campbell?
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.